Skeleton the Haunt House, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Again for more of the shit, hey?
Yeah, here we are again.
some people said it couldn't be done. And yet,
here we are.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another season of Haunt Heads. This is season 2, episode 1.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, as usual, I am Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven.
Howdy, Mimi.
Howdy, Janine.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Long time no see.
It has been.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Yeah, but we're back for more of this craziness.
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And Halloween's right around the corner, and I'm so excited.
It is right around the corner, and I kind of want to do a lead-up on Halloween. Just because, you know, Halloween is the time where you want to be, like, creepy and spooky and creeped out and whatever. So I think that on the lead-up to Halloween, I'm probably going to do a couple of urban legends, or also known as morality tales.
Okay.
Or urban belief tales. So I have another classic today, called Humans Can Lick Too.
Ooh, sounds good.
And it's a pretty popular urban legend. It's up there with, the man with a hook for a hand, or the hook man.
Uh-huh.
It's probably along the same lines as, the kidney thief.
Okay.
You know, the guy goes to Las Vegas and he wakes up in the bathtub and da-da-da, kidneys are gone. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's definitely in the same realm. It's as popular as those tales.
Nice.
So, what do you have today?
Well, we're going down south to Savannah, Georgia.
Down south?
Yes.
I think with all the heat and humidity, we could probably stay here, though. Like, I think it would be fine.
Yeah.
Right? Because today it's pretty humid.
It is.
Yeah, it's a little sticky.
It is. It looks like it would be chillier outside, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. And,
even last night, we had all the windows open, and I really could have gotten up and turned on the air, but I didn't.
Yeah. I had some windows open in the bedroom last night to kind of let some air flow through. But yeah, it's been pretty warm. Mm-hmm. And actually, wasn't the warmest day on the first day of fall? It was like 94 degrees.
Oh, I know. It's been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But like I keep saying, it's Wisconsin.
And global warming is not a thing.
Oh, no, it's not a thing at all.
It's not a thing.
No. We're having
it's not a thing that happens.
Earthquakes, and we're having tsunamis, and hurricanes, and volcanoes are becoming active.
And the polar ice is melting, but it's not a thing.
No.
No, it's not a real thing.
Boy.
Yeah.
We're just going to hell in a handbasket, that's all.
Yeah, full of holes. Full of holes, my dear.
Yeah.
So anything new to report? I know that you, you're fast approaching on your art show.
Yes. And,
I
don't have the date of the reception, but it's going to be January and February. January is going to be, on the east side, and then in February it'll be over on the north side.
Hmm.
So, but one thing I found out is I thought I was going to have a relatively large room for my artwork. Mm-hmm. It turns out that I'm going to have kind of a much smaller space.
Okay.
So most of my paintings I've been working on recently are really big. So now I've got to squeeze in little ones. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Michael's had a huge sale on not too long ago, so I bought a ton of canvases and
I'm ready
to go.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
And I've got lots of ideas, and the family's healthy, Knockwood.
Nice.
And we're ready to go.
Yeah.
What about you?
I am having a lot of fun teaching my driver's ed stuff.
Cool.
The kids that I'm teaching right now are really cool. A couple of them will probably even listen to this. Cool. And realized that their teacher swears like a sailor and is very dark indeed. But whatever, you know, yeah. It's cool. They're real great kids. What I found to be especially cool is the fact that, you know, you teach somebody something and then they retain that information and they can spit it back to you. Mm-hmm. You know, they can parrot it back to you. And I think that that's kind of a really cool, like, I don't know, it's just a really cool feeling to know that you're teaching somebody something that's going to be concrete in their lives that they're going to take with them, I think.
Oh, yeah, forever. Cool. Yeah. But yeah. I would not want to be the one in the car with them.
Yeah, no. I don't know.
I taught my three kids. That's enough. But I'm sure I'm going to have to teach grandchildren, too.
Probably.
I was pretty good with them and pretty patient. My husband, no, he did not have the patience for it.
I distinctly remember my grandmother yelling and screaming at me for, like, an hour at a time when she would take me out driving. And, you know, she knew all about driving and how to drive the right way and not at all. And, like, she just made up her own rules as she went. And then when I started to do something that was contrary to those rules, she would basically start screaming at me and be like, you're gonna kill us, whatever, and freak out. So, I mean, I'm an advocate for learning with your parents as much as possible. Because I think that they're supposed to have, like, 30 hours.
Right.
If you can get 40 or 50 hours worth of experience before you even start doing the behind-the-wheel training with an instructor...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's...
So much the better.
It's going to help you tremendously. And you're going to be a lot more calm and...
Yeah. Well, I actually started with each of my kids around the age of 14 in parking lots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
Yeah. I think that a lot of the kids that I'm teaching right now have gone out with their parents and have done, like, parking lot driving.
Yeah.
And, there's one girl that's learning how to drive in a truck, which I don't know about that, because trucks handle very differently than small sedans. And so when she's transitioning from a larger truck to the Prius, which is what she'll actually be learning in, it might be a little more difficult for her. But
yeah, I would. I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like we have ghosts rattling at the door.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually because it's October and we have all the freaking windows open.
Yeah, but it's not even that windy out.
No, it's really not. I don't know why. Well, there's a distinctive rattle.
Those trees are moving pretty good. Maybe it is windier than I thought.
It literally sounds like somebody's trying to get in here. And there's nothing I can do about that. So let's hope it doesn't show up on the recording.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, other than that, the driving instructor thing, on Tuesday... I start a new data entry job. So that's going to be okay, I guess.
Are you
because
still
going to
be
doing
the driving?
Yeah, because I only do the instruction at night from 6 to 8 or 7 to 9.
All right.
So in the daytime between like 7 and 3, I'll be doing data entry out in Brookfield. So it's the things that we do until we find the things that we actually want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, I mean, all the teaching that I'm doing, at the driving place, that is going to benefit me in the long run because ultimately what I want to do is I want to get my master's degree, in creative writing and then teach college writing courses.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's all teaching experience.
Right.
That I can put on my resume. So, you know, whatever, I'm fine with that.
Good. So where are you, what kind of stuff are your data entering?
It's like credit card stuff and it's for a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally just like credit card slips with like information redacted and you have to redact certain things and enter certain things and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that'll be easy peasy for you.
Yeah. It's, the guy told me that it's basically going to be like, you sit down there for 5 or 8 hours, and you just clickety clickety click, and you can listen to your music or whatever. Like
that's nice.
You just sit there and you just type, and I think I'm okay with that.
Okay, well I hope
just
you
let
like
me
it.
Sit in a small dark room in a basement and clickety click for 8 hours and get paid for it, and listen to you know my music. I don't know, whatever. It'll be fine.
So it's full time?
No, it's part time.
Okay.
Yep, that's part-time, and then the driving instruction stuff is part-time.
Okay.
So I'm kind of hoping that it's going to kind of work itself out.
Well, good.
So that I can still do both. As of right now, I can still.
Well, then how are you going to have time for haunt heads?
I'm still going to be able to make time for haunt heads because I don't work on the weekends.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good.
So we will still be here. Haunting away.
Just checking.
Haunting along. Staying spooky.
All right.
Yeah, no, we'll still be here. All right, so I don't know. Do you want to go first?
You can go first.
Now, Vivi, you're really setting a tone here for season two. This is the first episode of season two.
Uh-huh.
And you're setting a tone.
That you can go first?
That you don't want to go first. You don't ever want to go first.
Well, that's not true. Towards the end of season one, I was going
first.
Yeah,
you did. You opened up a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. All right, so we'll wait until the end of season two for you to do it again.
Would you like me to go first?
No, it doesn't matter to me. I just... Whatever, I'll just go.
We're nuts. Okay, so, yeah, go.
We're all nuts. We're all cuckoo.
Ba-dum-boom.
Ba-dum-boom. We're here all week. Try the veal. All right, so as I said... I'm kind of, for the month of October, I'm going to be on a kind of an urban legend, morality tale.
Cool.
Also often referred to as an urban belief tale, kick. So I decided to start the October, festivities with Humans Can Lick Too. And some of you may know this urban legend as, Aren't You Glad You Didn't Turn On the Light? That's another name for it. It's basically the same story, but it's been adapted so many times because it's like, you know, like you're sitting around the campfire or whatever and it's dark outside and you're like, what kind of story can I tell to scare the living shit out of my friends? And automatically you come to tales like the Hook Man, you come to, you know, the kidney thief, you know, the guy in Las Vegas who wakes up in a bathtub after this, you know, hot and steamy night with this beautiful woman. And he wakes up in the morning, and he's in a bathtub full of ice, and his kidneys are missing, and whatever. You know, I mean, it's the body under the bed. You know, those stories. It's really up there in the upper echelon of urban legends. So to start off, even though I don't really like Wikipedia, I decided to pull this off of Wikipedia because it had adequate citations.
Okay.
So it made me feel good about it versus, you know...
Okay. Because I usually skip over Wikipedia.
Well, I mean, way back when, I used to get drunk with my friends and edit it.
It was like, you then!
Every school paper that I ever had to do where I had incorrect citations, it was my fault.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I am a firm believer that Wikipedia, unless it has adequate... sources,
mm-hmm.
You shouldn't trust it as far as you can throw it. You just
right.
Shouldn't.
I agree.
So yeah, I mean, if you look at a Wikipedia article and you scroll all the way to the bottom and there's like a long list of sources and it's been checked and mm-hmm. whatever, I mean, that's one thing.
Right.
But people create Wikipedia pages for themselves, you know, like mm-hmm. it's just, you just don't know. You can't really trust the information on there a lot of the time.
Right.
So, according to Wikipedia.org, the term urban legend, as used by folklorists, has appeared in print since at least 1968, and that's just the term urban legend. Prior to this, they were often called, like I said, urban belief tales or morality tales. Jan Harold Brunvand, professor of English at the University of Utah, introduced this term to the general public in a series of popular books published beginning in 1981. Brunvand uses his collection of legends, The Vanishing Hitchhiker, American Urban Legends and Their Meanings, 1981, to make two points. First, that legends and folklore do not occur exclusively in so-called primitive or traditional societies. And second, that one could learn much about urban and modern culture by studying such tales. Many urban legends are framed as complete stories with plots and characters. The compelling appeal of the typical urban legend is its elements of mystery, horror, fear, and humor. Often they serve as cautionary tales, and some urban legends are morality tales that depict somebody usually a child, acting in some sort of a disagreeable manner, only to wind up in trouble, hurt, or dead. Mm-hmm. So, Rodney Dale, English author, editor, folklorist, and publisher, also a man with the most amazing eyebrows you've ever seen. Literally, like, Google Rodney Dale and look at some pictures of this mofo, because he's got, like, the most insane eyebrows. He's got Dolly-esque eyebrows. He invented the term FOAF, or friend of a friend. That coinage led to the terms FOAF lore and FOAF tale. So you might see them. Yeah, isn't that something?
It's like wings.
Yeah, they're like wings on his face. It's awesome. Okay. Yep, he's winging it. Using a narrative to relay information to an audience both personalizes and authenticates the story being told, which is why so many urban legends are actually believed by their recipients. I think that when we talked about the Hook Man, you mentioned something about going to the gas pump and the guy hiding under the car with the wire, the piano wire, and, like, getting women's ankles and stuff like that. I mean, that is an urban legend that so many people believe is an actual thing.
Actually, a number of years ago, up in Brown Deer, there were about 3 or 4 cases of somebody doing that right around where the Target used to be on Brown Deer Road.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the other thing. Urban legends, you sometimes have to wonder if it's fiction inspiring real-life events, or real-life events inspiring fiction. And oftentimes, it's fiction inspiring real-life events. They say that, what was it they said in Scream? Horror movies don't create serial killers. Horror movies make serial killers more creative.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you see something on TV, and if you're fucked up enough, you think to yourself, well, I could do that. And then you go out and actually do it. Or, you know, you're a normal-esque person, whatever normal means. And you watch the movie and you're like, wow, that's really fucked up. I'm never going to do that to anybody. But there's always going to be that percentage of people who are going to look at it and be like, I should go out by the Target on Brown Deer Road and hide underneath people's cars and attack their ankles with piano wire because I'm an asshole and also creepy. So, essentially, urban legends play on human weaknesses like fear, and they often come to the conclusion that being naive or being unaware of our surroundings will eventually cause us to come to some sort of harm, which is where we get into humans can lick too. And so, of course, as is the case with many urban legends, you have to set a mood. So let's set a mood.
Okay.
It's a quiet night in a quaint suburban neighborhood, and an elderly lady and her dog have just settled down for an evening of reading and relaxation. She's got a cup of tea and a blanket, and before she realizes it, she's drifting off into peaceful slumber, petting her dog. Shortly after midnight, the woman awakes to a strange noise. It sounds as if there's a tap somewhere in the house dripping. She rises from bed and heads downstairs to the kitchen to check the faucet. She ensures that both taps are off and makes her way back to bed. As she slides beneath the covers, she reaches her hand down the side of the bed to check on her faithful dog. The dog licks her hand, and the woman falls back to sleep once more. A short time later, the woman wakes again to the same dripping sound. This time, she checks the upstairs bathroom. She inspects the faucet, but it's not dripping. She turns to check the shower, and upon pulling back the shower curtain, she's horrified to find her faithful dog hanging by its neck, its intestines hanging out. Blood is dripping from the entrails into the drain. On the wall, there's a message in blood. Humans can lick, too. The woman turns to look into the face of her murderer. So, according to Snopes.com, even the legends circulating today have roots that run deep. The licked hand shows up in a diary entry penned in England in August of 1871, by a man named Dearman Burchall. Burchall writes, "One of the guests told of a clergyman who was aroused in the middle of the night by his wife, who said, 'John, dear, I'm sure there's a robber under the bed. I hear him moving. Do get up and see.' John replied, 'Oh, it's only the Newfoundland dog. I just put my hand out and he licked it.' Next morning, all the jewelry and the other effects in the house had disappeared. Now, when I read that, I read it in, like, this really uppity, like, English, like, upper crust society accent. And every time I do, I just laugh my ass off because I think it's so funny. John, dear, I'm sure there's a robber under the bed. Do get up and see. As if it's not something like, you know, it's not a big deal. There's just a robber under the bed. Like, yeah. All right. Oy. This urban legend also dates back to 1919 in a story titled The Diary of Mr. Pointer. And the story is by Mr. M.R. James. It's basically about a young man who is reclining while reading. He's absently stroking what he believes to be his dog. Spoiler, the dog's already dead. In some incarnations, the elderly woman that we have in this story is replaced by a nubile young girl, like a college student. In some cases, it's a 6-year-old girl who has just gotten the dog as a birthday present. Mm-hmm. The story is often told to those in college, particularly freshmen. In others, she can be a preteen. It really seems like the story is designed to fit certain situations. So if you're a college co-ed and you're sitting in a room full of other college co-eds, are you going to tell the story about the 6-year-old girl who got the dog for Christmas or for a birthday? Or are you going to tell the story about the sexy, nubile college student who wandered into her dorm room and went to sleep one night and woke up and found, you know, this hanging in her shower? So the appearance of the message scrawled in blood varies as well. Sometimes the text is found on the floor in the bathroom. Other times it's on the mirror above the sink. The woman then will see the image of her soon-to-be murderer reflected behind her in the mirror. Mm-hmm. The fate of the dog also changes. Sometimes it's just hanged. Occasionally the dog is found skinned. Depending on the storyteller, there are cases in which the woman doesn't even leave her bed the first time that she's frightened by the strange noise. She simply reaches her hand down to be comforted by the dog, which at this point is already dead. Mm-hmm. The story of the licking madman can also be traced to a chain letter that circulated on the internet several years ago. The story is basically the same, but with a few
slight... I hate chain letters. Never send me one.
But with a few slight variations. According to the chain letter version, the story is set in a town called Farmersburg. The name conjures an image you might find on the top of a butter tub or something, like the bright sunshine, the lush green fields, quiet, tight-knit neighborhoods. The setting is also a perfect storm. People feel safe in their routines, in familiar surroundings, and as the chain letter illustrates, that sense of safety is just not realistic. Mm-hmm. So basically, the Farmersburg urban legend goes something like this. A young girl is left at home while her parents head out for an overnight trip. She's told to lock every window and door and does so with the exception of a window in the basement that will close but won't lock. She locks the basement door to be safe and snuggles up with the family dog to go to sleep. At some point during the night, the girl wakes with a start. It sounds like a tap somewhere in the house is dripping, so this is another common theme. She ignores it and tries to go back to sleep, reaching for the dog on the floor. When the dog licks her hand, she feels safe, she feels comforted, and she's able to go back to sleep. In the morning, the girl awakes to find the dog missing from her side, but she doesn't really think that much of it. You know, dogs wander around. She heads to the kitchen to check the tap to see if that was what was dripping, and she sees her parents pulling down the driveway through the window. She heads upstairs to the bathroom to take a shower and finds the family dog skinned and hanging from the shower rod. The dog's blood is dripping into a growing puddle on the floor, which is the dripping sound that she heard. The girl quickly runs to her bedroom in search of a weapon, just in case the culprit is still in the house, but she comes upon a message scrawled on a piece of paper on the floor by her bed. It's written in blood. And it reads, "Humans can lick too, beautiful." Yeah. Okay. So there's like, that one has kind of a sexual undertone. Right. And I think, again, it really depends on the recipient, the intended recipient, and how much of an effect certain parts of this story are going to have on certain people.
Right.
For me, if somebody told me that the dog had been skinned, I probably would have been like, ooh, yeah, that's gross. But if somebody tells me that the dog has been disemboweled, well, that adds more weight to it.
Right.
And it makes it more disturbing. So it's going to affect me more.
Right.
Versus just skinning the dog or just hanging the dog in mm-hmm. the shower, you know. So whether you've heard the story around a campfire or you've received a chained letter in your email, it's likely that you're already familiar with this urban legend. It's quite popular and often used to strike fear into the hearts of children who insist on being mature enough to be left at home. As the story illustrates, bad things happen to those who ignore their personal safety and lull themselves into a false sense of security. Often, the darkest things happen to those who live in the safest places. So, I hope that you all have pleasant dreams.
I remember as a kid, I'd surround myself with all my little stuffed animals all the way around me.
Yeah. I used to put tape and stuff on my dolls because I was convinced that they were coming alive at night.
Oh.
And so I figured if I put the tape on them, then I would know if they moved.
Okay.
I never liked dolls. I was always freaked out by dolls.
Uh-huh.
So I usually never had them in my room, but there were a couple of porcelain dolls that my grandparents gave me that were, you know, valuable.
Right. And
I wanted to keep them safe just because they were.
Right.
So. But yeah, totally used to tape them up and then
okay.
wake up in the morning and be like, okay, all right. No, no Chucky-esque movements during the night. Good.
Ooh, okay. That was a good one.
So what do you got, Mimi, from down south?
All right, so we're taking a trip. We're going all the way down south to Savannah, Georgia.
Mm.
And we're going to talk about some of the ghosts of Wright Square.
Wright Square.
Wright Square. So Wright Square was first laid out in 1733. It was originally named after John, Lord Viscount Percival, Earl of Edgemont. The name was changed in 1763 after Sir James Wright, who was the last royal governor of the province of Georgia. So I guess that means he was a British dude. But anyway,
right.
So this location was also considered the gathering place for all the towns, the area's events. All the, you know, they would have their farmers markets and hangings.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Yeah, Monday is the farmer's market. Stuff.
The post office.
We're going to be selling zucchini, yeah. squash, and honey. And then on Tuesday, we're going to hang Mr. Jones from his neck until he's dead.
Right, right.
Which is just what you do in the square.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they got the land from a Indian chief. He was a Yamacraw Indian.
Okay.
And his name was Tomochichi. And he really liked the English people, and he wanted to be friends with them, and he was really good to them. And so he gave them land. And so when Chief Tomochichi died, the governor at the time the chief wanted to be buried somewhere in the town. And so they buried him in the center on the square, and they had this little monument of, it was kind of like a pyramid of stones
okay.
on top of him, because the Native Americans would do that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was buried in the center of the square in about 1842, after a prominent businessman / politician and / founder of the Central Railroad and Baking Company, William Washington Gordon, the township decided that they had to create a monument for this dude, and they dug up Chief Tomochichi's bones, and they scattered the bones, and they took down the monument. But there was like a historical society that was appalled, and they wanted to bring him back. So they gathered what bones they could find, and they made a huge granite monument for him, and they placed him on the east side of the square.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, what is it, like, two of the worst things that you could do to another person.
Yeah.
Cut them off in line in the McDonald's drive thru and dig up their bones and scatter them.
Yep.
Yeah, those are like the top two. For me, anyway. I don't know about anybody else. I have my priorities.
Cut mine anywhere. Trust boy, me. People get nuts. Okay, so I have tried to research to find any other stories, but there's a little tale that if you walk around the monument three times saying his name, that he'll appear before you. Alice Riley and her husband and 38 other people arrived in Georgia.
Okay.
In Savannah, and they were near dead when they finally got there. They're from Ireland, and it was a brutal trip, and there wasn't enough food.
Oh, yeah, because they probably had to come over on boats and...
Yeah. Yeah. And so they ended up going to work for a man named William Wise, who owned a very large farmstead in the area. And he was known to be a very difficult, evil, tyrannical, nasty person.
Mm.
He also had servants actually bathe him like a baby and groom him like you would a child.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1734, he was found dead in his bedroom. And his body, it doesn't say that the head was cut off or anything, but it said his body was laid on the bed and his head with a scarf around the neck was placed in a large tub of water.
Oh.
So either he's hanging off the bed with his head in a tub of water, or his body is on the bed and then the head's off in a tub of water. Okay. Couldn't find anything specific if it was separated from the body or not. So
it just seems an odd way to drown somebody, but okay.
It just just makes me curious. It's
usually more effective if you keep the head attached to the rest of the body and then drown the person, but whatever, you know. No, maybe it's more practical.
Okay. I don't know. It was just the way it was worded was really weird. So I looked up on a couple other stories about it, and it was all kind of worded the same way. So it was just weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Maybe it's me. So two people were missing from his property, two servants. One was Alice Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was her husband. So when they captured them, they were tried and convicted of murder. Alice always said it wasn't her, it wasn't her.
Yeah.
Allison's husband was hung first. And he was actually the first person hung in Savannah.
Oh.
And then before they were going to hang Alice, they found out she was pregnant. And actually, she said she was pregnant by William Wise, who was murdered. Mm-hmm. She said that he raped her multiple times. But she still says she didn't kill him. So the baby was born. She named him James, and almost immediately he was taken away from her.
Right.
And then they hung her, like, almost immediately after that.
Mm.
And they left her hanging for 3 days.
Oh.
Yeah. And then 2 weeks after the hanging, the baby died. So they buried the baby with her. And she still maintains that she was innocent to the day she died. And the tree that she was hanging from, after that point, never grew any moss on the trees. And the oak trees in Savannah, Georgia, tend to grow a lot of moss.
Yeah.
So, people say there's a legend that no Spanish moss will grow where innocent blood has been spilt. Mm-hmm. So, could she have been innocent?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. People started spreading rumors after she died that she was a witch and that she placed a curse on the people of Savannah. There's stories of Alice's ghost appearing before mothers who are carrying their babies, and she tries to take the babies from them.
Oh.
Others claim she's looking for her infant baby and begging for help. And then when they try to help, because they think she's just somebody dressed up in period costume, she's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just comes and disappears. Tourists have often called the police, claiming that a woman is looking for her lost child. Hmm. Older cops know who it is, but the newbies, they send out. And then they later find out, you know, they think it's a big joke, and like a hazing. Mm-hmm. she's supposedly very active in Wright Square. There's a tale about an old racist white woman carrying a stick and attempting to hit black people with it. Oh. And then, you know, when they turn around and try and confront her, she's gone.
Huh.
So, very weird. Another story is that of a couple who are seen in period clothes walking hand in hand. Then all of a sudden they disappear. Could it be Alice and her husband? We don't know. Yeah. A young girl was walking in the square with her mom, and they kept hearing footsteps behind them. So they would turn around and nobody was there. And then all of a sudden the girl was poked really hard in the back, and she quickly took a picture. No one was there when she turned around, but on the picture, it showed a giant white orb there. Then there was a woman who actually worked on the square, and she got into her car one day after work, and there was like this cold gust of wind that just kind of blew right through her. And she felt really uncomfortable, but she got into her car and she drove home, and she kept expecting to see something in her rearview mirror. She didn't see anything, but she was comfortable. She was uncomfortable. And then she got home, and she went to bed with her dog, and her dog started acting weird. And she, all of a sudden, down the hallway, she heard in, like, the office room that she has, the computer went on, the radio went on, the TV went on, all its super loud voices and stuff. So she was like really freaked out. She refused to go in the other room. She just stayed in the bedroom with her dog. And then in the morning she went to look and everything was fine. She gets in her car to go back to work, and a cool blast of wind again goes right through her. She drives to the square all the time, very uncomfortable. She gets to the square and she says, "Get out. You're not allowed in my car anymore. Get out." And so she gets out of her car, and she feels a big gust of wind, and then after that, nothing. Never, you know, came back in her car again. So that was funny. I thought very funny. And then...
it's really interesting how people insert animals into stories as a means to explain paranormal phenomena, or as a means to... comfort themselves, because, you know, animals are supposed to have this heightened sense of awareness, and they're supposed to know when something is wrong or when something is not quite right. So if you have a dog that's acting weird and you're like, the dog doesn't usually act weird like this, there's something strange going on. It's like that, you know, another level of authenticity that they want to add to the story. It's pretty interesting.
So basically in Savannah, there's a lot of little squares like this that is haunted. So in future episodes, we might go back to Georgia.
But
that's it for now. That was Alice is like the biggest part of the square. People hear her and feel her, and, you know.
So it's Alice and then the chief. What was his name?
Tamachichi.
Tamachichi.
A couple walking hand in hand, an old lady who's racist. And they're all seen wearing period gear.
You know, and that's just in the one square.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of haunted squares in Savannah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So why do we think that Savannah is so haunted?
Well, I think it's really old.
Yeah.
And I think Savannah has a lot of history to it.
Yeah, I've never actually been...
And it's hot. Down south. I think the heat does crazy things to people.
Yeah, it makes people act crazily. Or see things.
But,
yeah,
you know, it is very old, and I think that a lot of these very old places just have some sort of aura about them.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of residue.
You kind of feel that way when you're in St. John's, too, in Newfoundland. The you know, the city has been there... for so long, you know, it's the oldest city in North America. And it's almost like you can feel the energy in the streets of all of these people that have passed through there, and everything from, you know, horse and buggy to modern day. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, I mean, lots of history.
And there's a little teeny tiny town right up on Green Bay Road and Pioneer Road. Mm. And there's only a few buildings left, and then it's all suburban areas.
Right.
But there's an old lumber mill, and go there, and it's just, you look at it, and you just think of what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, just, it's a neat feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, another thing that I really enjoy about certain places in Wisconsin is when you go in there, they have photographs of what the place used to look like. Oh, I know. And photographs of, like, family members, you know. Get it out of your system.
I don't think it's gonna.
The Bunzels over here across the way. In their old location, they had, like, shelves behind the cash register where you could, like, see pictures of family members and whatever. And the way that the building looked, you know, back in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Yeah, it's pretty neat to see the history of places. Mm-hmm. And also very interesting to read about it and report on it.
So, even when you go into antique stores and you see all the different pictures and family photos, you just kind of wonder, how did it get there? Mm-hmm. You know, where's the rest of the family? What's...
Well, we were kind of talking about this before we went on air, but... you know, recently I had to help with the cleaning out of the basement of my wife's grandparents. And, they're trying to pare down what they have in their house so that when they pass away or one of them has to go into assisted living or whatever, it's not going to be as much of a burden on the family.
Right.
So basically what they did was, you know, they told everybody to come over. They had, you know, they ate. And then after they ate, everybody, like, took to the basement and started rummaging through everything. So we found some really cool stuff, but they had little pieces of paper that said, this belonged to so-and-so when he was a boy. Mm-hmm. So, like, my wife's grandfather's name is Otto, and we got his erector set.
Cool.
And inside it says, childhood toy of Otto. So it's just, you know, it's just kind of cool. Yeah. It's like a connection to the past.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we found a lot of cool stuff while we were down there, but everybody left with, like, carloads of stuff, and it was pretty cool to look through that stuff. Also a little sad.
Yeah.
Just because of, you know, the purpose behind it. You know, this is why you're doing it, so that they're not going to have to deal with as much after they pass away, but yeah, it was kind of neat, so. And also the antiques that I have seen while I've been here in the U.S. are very different from the ones that you might find in my part of the world in Canada.
Oh, really?
So, you know, just finding different things and being like, well,
different
how?
What is that
for? like, for example, there was like a glass jar and it had a small hose in it. And then it had what looked like a bicycle pump attached to it. And it was for bug spray.
Okay.
But I'd never seen anything like that before. Oh. So when I saw it, I was like, what is that? Is that a bicycle pump? And Joanne was like, no, that's for, you know, that was for bug spray. You know, they'd put the bug spray in the little glass jar.
Right.
And then they'd pump it and it would come out the end. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
But yeah, even, you know, people's different tastes in music. You know, they had a lot of classical stuff, but they also had like a couple of big band presses that I picked up. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. All right, so it sounds like we are done.
Yep.
We are at this point going to be going to a biweekly format. So we won't have a new episode next week. We will have it the following week.
Yep.
Hope everybody stays safe and, you know, checks under their bed before they go to sleep.
And be afraid if you get licked.
Yeah. Rule number one, always know who's licking you.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Until next time, this is Mimi and Janine signing off. Take care and stay spooky.
Peace out.